From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
So women's health, it's from adolescence through childbirthing phase and even through menopause, is on our next guest's radar on a daily basis. Dr. Tanya Bodner is a local OBGYN, and she's fairly new to the Park City area. She practices at the Park City Hospital, and she delights in her job, whether it's delivering babies or leading the gynecological care for young women. She joins us in the studio. We're very happy to have you, Dr. Tanya, Dr. Bodner, however you say
good
it.
Good morning to both of you, and thank you to KPCW for inviting me and having me here this morning. It's been about 1 year, as of yesterday actually, that I've been at Park City Hospital joining the Women's Health Division, the OBGYN subspecialty clinic, and we are just loving living in Park City and loving being part of the Intermountain community.
Where'd you move from?
So we came from the East Coast. My husband and I were both in Connecticut for a number of years, and we just felt it was time to sort of make the change and enjoy mountain living and having this new, amazing, healthy lifestyle and enjoying our family.
And you were talking about how much your husband is enjoying living here as he was able to see one of your son's soccer games the other evening, and that's sort of a departure from maybe a little busier life or a little different sort of life where it's not a small community and you're not able to do those things all the time as a parent.
Yes, you've said it perfectly. It's a different buzz out here than it was East Coast living, and we've just been welcomed with open arms, amazing friends, a great sense of community, even within our own neighborhood. And it's just been a great change to focus on family, focus on each other. My husband is, you know, working from home now, so the commute is just down the stairs and hanging out with the dog. And he's able to then in the afternoon help out with the kids and pick them up from school and do after school activities. So it's been a very, very nice and welcome change for the whole family.
Well, as a expatriate of the East Coast, I'm done talking all this recreational fun talk. Let's get down to business now. I am super curious to hear a lot more from you about women's health. And specifically, I'd love to jump into something that recently happened for me and my family. We took our daughter, she's 10 years old, into the pediatrician. And there were some really interesting conversations that we were really not prepared for.
Absolutely. So, you know, GYN care, or OBGYN care, a lot of women sort of think, oh, it's just about having babies and then I'm done coming to see you. But it really spans the whole lifespan of a woman from adolescent care, as you're talking about, through pregnancy and then later in life when things start changing and the hormones start changing in menopausal times. So, it's actually something that I really value and that I really like talking about is the adolescent population. And something that you brought up, which is, you know, some of immunization and screening and preventative care is just as important as treating when there is a problem and an issue. So I think what you're trying to, what we're talking about is the Gardasil vaccine, which is the HPV vaccine that protects against the human papillomavirus. And we know that this can cause changes, cervical changes that can ultimately lead to cervical cancer. And we don't want to see anybody with cervical cancer. We want to be able to catch things early. And even if we can prevent it altogether by giving this vaccine, that would be really the optimal thing to do. So women as young as 9 can receive this vaccine, and this is per FDA studies. And it used to be up through the age of 26 that we can vaccinate. It's a series of 3 injections. And then recently, just last year in October, the CDC and the FDA came out with new guidelines and new recommendations to vaccinate up through the age of 45 to be able to catch another subset of women that may be at higher risk for getting the HPV virus, which we know is a sexually transmitted virus.
And I'll also relate, you know, having come to Park City and Utah and and wanting to kind of insulate and protect my family and have the really great conversations. I thought it was really important that you mentioned, you know, you have to have these relationships with your kids and you have to be having these honest conversations. With that being said, you also have to be thoughtful and address some fears and potential concerns. Help us to understand what is unique about this HPV cancer for the cervical cancer and how you can actually like prevent that through a vaccine.
Right.
Vaccine.
So, you know, as parents, and I have two small children as well, we want to sort of cocoon our children and think that nothing bad is going to happen to them. But we need to be honest and we need to be realistic about what is really happening out there. And, you know, our adolescents, our teenagers may be engaging in sexual activity and behavior that we may want to close our eyes to, we may want to close our ears to and not know about. And that's why it's so important to have these honest conversations. Our pediatricians do a tremendous job at this since they're seeing them early on. I always love talking to our older adolescents, and even if they don't necessarily need a GYN exam, a pelvic exam, just having the face-to-face sort of talk so that they know that there's somebody else in there on their side that they can talk to. And I do always say, you know, mom, dad, they're your best friend. They're the first person that you should go to. But if something feels awkward or embarrassing and you don't want to talk about sex or you don't want to ask those questions that just seem really weird, you can come to me. And even if it sounds like something, you know, very different or very embarrassing, none of that stuff embarrasses me. Talking about any of those things is part of my day-to-day verbiage. So I like to have that open conversation with our young patients. And even when they're off to college, I say, call me. Call me from college. I'd love to talk to you and know how things are going. And if you have sort of funny run-ins or funny questions or things that people are talking about that you're not really sure, let's try to figure out the truth behind it. Mm. So the thing about the Gardasil vaccine is that it does protect against the HPV virus, the human papillomavirus that we know can cause these changes. And the focus is to try to get this vaccine early on prior to these young men and women, it's both sexes, becoming sexually active. If we can create that immune response in their bodies to help fight off the virus and the infection if and when they come in contact with it, then we're in a better place than once they already have HPV and we're starting to see changes on their pap smear and changes that we may need to sort of diagnose and treat later on.
I have a question, and not to hover on the HPV vaccine for too long, but it's really interesting, as we were talking about in the green room, both Pete and I were a little bit ignorant, shall we say. My kids were, I think, maybe around teenagers when the vaccine came out. And there seemed to be a lot of controversy around it just because it was new, right? And you don't know what the side effects are or the long-term effects. And I remember hearing, well, boys need it too. And I'm assuming that's because they can be a carrier of that.
Exactly.
The human
papillomavirus,
does it present in a male in any way?
Right. So HPV has both low-risk strands and high-risk strands. The high-risk strands are the ones that we are concerned about with regards to cervical cancer. And in that respect, the male, the guy in the relationship, may be a carrier for this and then pass it along to the women. However, a low-risk strand of HPV can cause genital warts or condylomas. So in that sense, it's not asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. They can have a clinical manifestation of it. And that's when, you know, if it's bothersome, those young men or regularly aged men can go off to see their urologist and have that taken care of. But we do vaccinate both men and women, as this is a sexually transmitted infection. And we need to be able to protect both against it. And therefore, from a carrier standpoint, protect our young women so that then the men are not passing it along to them.
Okay.
As you said, it came out, you know, over a decade ago, and there was controversy in the beginning from two sort of perspectives. One is always long-term side effects. We don't know really what any of these new treatments or new vaccines or new immunizations do until we study them out for a little while. And that was some of the skepticism surrounding it. And the other controversy was, well, for vaccinating these young men and women, are we giving them then permission to start becoming sexually active? And I think it's so much past that, right? We need to be realistic about what may and will happen. And instead of closing our eyes and sort of being an ostrich in the sand, it's important to actively protect our young population from something as crazy as cancer.
Right. Well, and it's really interesting. I'm going to up a generation here, but for those people who might find themselves single after a divorce or something like that, and they, like people of our age, would have not known about this. Now they may be sexually active with different partners, and it's a good time to get the vaccine.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was what was really exciting last year in October when this new guideline, new recommendation for vaccination came out that included up through the age of 45. When we, you know, we sit down and we talk about your history and everything about you and make sure that you're up to date with everything. Once you sort of, you were past that 27 marker, you were too late for it. You were too late to get it. And I know that that happened to me even as it was coming out. I was sort of just past that window. So it's super exciting that now the CDC and the FDA have come out with this new recommendation. There are changes in life. We hope that we're going to be with our same partner forever, but things can happen and you find yourself maybe not in as low risk a situation or relationship as you had been. And we do recommend these women to go ahead and get vaccinated.
Great.
Well, thank you. I know I was educated today, so I hope you as an audience are too. And you're spending a lot of time educating and treating people in this realm, but you're also spending a lot of time doing births and working with People's Health Clinic. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with People's Health Clinic and kind of some of your community.
Thank you for bringing that up. It is a part of my job that I'm very passionate about and really, really touches my heart and my soul. There is an amazing organization, the People's Health Clinic, which is a nonprofit. It is for our uninsured patients that live in our community. It's for the people, it's for our working patients that just don't have insurance. They just don't have the finances and the resources to do that. And the team down at the People's Health Clinic is amazing. Beth Armstrong, our executive director, is always just working hard to get funds so that we can continue giving this excellent care, and the team down there is exceptional. So I have the privilege of being there half a day a week, and we have a large number of wonderful volunteers who also give of their time in all subspecialties. I focus mostly on the prenatal care, our women who are pregnant and who need to just have their continuity of care, make sure their pregnancy is going well. And then we are fortunate enough at Park City Hospital to be able to deliver them as well. So our partners down in Heber Hospital also share in this effort. And then those women who are living down in that community can deliver down at Heber Hospital. But we are just feel so fortunate that we have this opportunity at Park City Hospital to share in this care. And these women are exceptional. They are hardworking. They are loyal. And they are just so, so grateful for, you know, having the same opportunity in healthcare that everybody else in the community is able to get, you know, despite their inability to pay. So it's been just a really special part of what I do here.
And from your experience working in New York, do you see that what we're doing here and what you're providing through People's Health Clinic and the hospital is similar, better? I mean, what's your experience comparatively?
Our standard of care is excellent. I mean, we are really following all guidelines, all protocols. It is exceptional care. And it's not just from the physician side. Our nursing staff is fabulous. They're really up to date with what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. Our labor and delivery unit is beautiful, but really cutting edge. And we're able to do everything that I remember doing East Coast. Now, we do have some limitations in Park City Hospital, and that's why we have some wonderful relationships down in Salt Lake with IMC and LDS Hospital. if some of our babies that are born need some extra help and extra care, we have excellent resources here. And we have great neonatal nurse practitioners and women who can and providers who can help. And if we feel that it's a little bit out of the realm of what we can handle, then there are transport services that we take our patients down to the valley, and then they can get the level of care that they need there. But really, if you are otherwise low risk and just having routine prenatal care, prenatal course, everything is really stuff that we can manage here at Park City Hospital.
Your team is how big at Park City Hospital?
So we are very sad that we just lost Dr. Jeannie Falk. She really had a stronghold in the community, and she had a very nice following. And I know that I am not alone in wishing her well in her future endeavors. So now we are a team of three doctors, Dr. Jeremy Clark, Dr. John Poss, and myself. I feel very confident that within the next few months, we will be back up to 1 in 4, and we are actively working on that process right now to hire another provider. And then we have our nurses and our staff in our clinic that helps support our efforts. And then we also have the labor and delivery nurses, nurse midwife, and everybody there who help out with the actual labor, the delivery, and the postpartum, which is a nice sort of niche that we can do all of those things on the same floor.
Our guest is Dr. Tanya Bodner, and she's at Park City Hospital and OBGYN, obviously, from the conversation. And let's see, I have one more question for you. We've got to let you go pretty soon, but just about a minute left. I wanted to ask you about hormones. I think you mentioned hormones briefly and moving into the next generation of menopausal women. And we know that, especially in this community, there is a lot of preoccupation, I would say, with things like testosterone, keeping those levels high and maybe even too high sometimes. And I just wanted to get your brief philosophy on hormone treatment.
Sure. So this is very controversial, and this is something that has come up a lot in my practice here, which is a little different from my East Coast practice. And I think it's because we are just so active in this community, and we're mountain biking and we're hiking and we're moving, and we just want to make sure that we are at the best sort of level of ourselves. And what I like to remind women is we're not the same woman that we were when we first got our first period at 12 to 14, right? We're not the same woman that we were at 30 or at 40. And the changes continue to happen, and they continue to progress, and they are natural changes. And the things that happen are supposed to be happening, and we need to sort of evolve with them. But there is a lot of controversy about hormone replacement therapy and when to start and when not to start. And I think that's just important to have an open conversation with your gynecologist. And how are you feeling? What are your symptoms? Are they affecting your day to day? Are they something that you sort of are able to get through? And when is the right time, if at all, to start hormone replacement therapy? And what are the different modalities for doing that? And I think we can spend a whole topic, a whole
we might day have to have you back
doing that, because there are a lot of different sort of mindsets on hormones.
Okay, that said, I'm going to end this with a very quick story that a healthcare professional said to me. So do you still want to mountain bike at the same competitive level that you always have? And I said, yeah, of course. And this person said, okay, well, then you should do this. You might have to pluck some hairs out of your chin, but, you know, it'll keep you. And I thought, okay, that's weird.
Right.
Pluck some hairs. Okay. Yeah. Shall we end on that note?
I think we can come back to that.
Yeah, we'll revisit that
Thank
conversation.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. And I'm sure we'll have other episodes together to
thank
keep discussing.
Dr. Tanya Bodner, thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.